Happy holidays and welcome back to the Comics That We Love, a show where I sit down with a guest each week to take our favorite stories in comics and dissect what makes them great. Sometimes the creators themselves will join in and help us understand their process and how they attack their work. I am your kid running down the stairs excitedly on Christmas morning to find a tree surrounded by gifts, and also your host, Zach McCrary. Today, Santa gave me exactly what I wanted this year, and I was a good boy, so I deserve it. I was able to have a chat with the author of Protectors of Wakanda, a history and training manual of the Dora Milaje, Ms. Karima Horn. Karima took the Dora Milaje, the protectors of the Black Panther, and she turned their history and their preparation to become warriors and formed it into a cohesive narrative that gives you not only a great look at the characters, who have only just begun to get the spotlight, but also a great view of the history of Wakanda at the same time. She was an absolute joy to chat with about Protectors of Wakanda. We delve into what the process of writing a book under the Marvel banner is like, how she went about adding more depth to an already expansive place and people like Wakanda and the Wakandans, and especially the history of the Dora Milaje. And we even chatted about what comics she's reading and what she thought about Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I could have waxed nerdy with her for hours. She was so much fun to talk to. One more note before we get down to the brass tacks. Karima is all over the internet in all forms of media. I will have links to just a handful of the many things she takes part in the show notes. And if you haven't yet, I'm telling you, Protectors of Wakanda is a fun read. I've been through it twice now. I'm basically a Dora Milaje expert. Okay, no, that part's a lie. But I have read it twice. Anywho, without further ado, to walk the path of the Dora Milaje is not an easy one. It takes not only great physical prowess, but also a mind as sharp as the spear you'll wield, and a heart as bright and vibrant as the lands of Wakanda. Do you have what it takes to stand at the side of the Damisa Sarki, Emperor T'Challa, the Black Panther? Find out in Protectors of Wakanda with author Karima Horn. Karima Horn, welcome to the Comics That We Love.
Hello, how are you?
I am wonderful now, thank you very much.
I feel like it was just yesterday that I saw you at Baltimore Comic Con.
I know, right? I know. It was such a fun time chatting with you. Why is this not being recorded right now? I was like, what? But like, we're talking about all this cool stuff. She's giving great answers to these questions I'm asking. This is a podcast. I'm just standing here in a group, in a crowd.
But we made it happen. I'm glad we were able to make it happen.
That's right. Thanks for being here. So for anyone out there who may not know you or may not realize that they know you because you are kind of prolific in the nerd sphere, why don't you fill everybody in a little bit on what it is that you do, or all the many talents that you have.
I was going to say, like, which thing? Well, I'm Karima Horn, a.k.a. The Blurred Girl, and I am a culture journalist, content creator, and I have bylines at Mashable, The Wrap. The Wrap is where I write mostly, like, reviews for TV and streaming, I should say. And but I've also written, like, Sci-Fi Wire, OK Africa. A lot of people know me from Sci-Fi Wire because I had an indie comic column there for a couple of years. And then last year, I was lucky enough to Marvel asked me to write this incredible book about the Dora Milaje, and it's sort of like their origin story. And it's called Black Panther, Protectors of Wakanda, a history and training manual of the Dora Milaje. It is a mouthful, but we just call it Protectors of Wakanda for short. And the book's been doing really well. And what I was able to do was create this origin story around these characters that everybody sees but doesn't really quite know that much about. Mm-hmm. And also, I was able to put quite a bit of history in the book. I was able to talk about all the 16 kings and queens of Wakanda and sort of the lore behind vibranium and their weapons and their training. So I had a lot of fun.
That's one of the things that I liked best about this book was that you did, you took these characters, because in terms of like age of characters, especially at Marvel, the Dora Milaje are kind of still young characters, you know, like it was what, like 1998, I think, when Christopher Priest,
yeah.
And so, but they always kind of were in the background of what was happening for a long period of time. And they've only really started to shine, I'd say. Well, how long do you think? Like the last six, seven years?
The MCU. Yeah. I really think it was 2018 when they were given life as live action characters that people really started to hone in on them. And yeah, like you said, Christopher Priest first created them. And then the Midnight Angels were created by Jonathan Mayberry and Doom War. Mm-hmm. And then Ta-Nehisi Coates revisited them again in his run starting in 2016. So it's really been interesting watching the trajectory of these characters. And it's also it's funny. I was like really surprised that I got the book. And then when I thought about it, I'm like, it is kind of on brand, because I regularly write on my website as well as other places about characters that people don't talk about. Like, everybody's looking at the main characters. They don't look at these side characters who have some really interesting stories. So yeah, I was excited. I was terrified, but I was also excited.
So how did that come about with Marvel? You said that Marvel actually approached you to write this book, right?
Yeah. So the way it works, this is a prose novel. There are mm-hmm. a lot of pictures in it, but it is a prose novel. And what happens is Marvel proper basically lends out its license to a lot of different publishing houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they will come up with different stories for different age groups, different storylines, different characters. So, of course, last year they knew Black Panther was, you know, Wakanda Forever was coming out this year.
Sure.
And so they commissioned a lot of different authors. In fact, I'm very surprised at how many books there are out. There's a Wakanda cookbook and everything.
Oh, wow.
So I was asked by Quarto Publishing. My imprint is Beckett and Mayer, part of Epic Inc. And mm-hmm. what they came to me with was, hi, we were interested in you writing a book about the origin story of the Dora Milaje. Marvel sent us. I was like, I'm sorry, what? And also, because like I said, I do so much interviewing in this space. And at that time, my sci-fi column was still like around. So every week I was talking to a different comic book creator or a different writer about their book. So I thought they were asking me to interview somebody who've written a book about the Dora. They're like, no. We want that to be you. And then I was like, oh. And then I say exactly what you shouldn't say. And that is, are you sure? Like, you're not supposed to say that. You're not supposed, when Marvel calls, you're supposed to say, okay, sure.
Yeah, be like, oh, I'm totally. Yeah, why not? Sure.
I was like, do they know I haven't written a book? Like, and they knew I had written. Like, I'd written long form, but not as long as a novel. And they were like, it's okay. We have editors to help you with that. And I was like, okay. And then I remember having a meeting with like a bunch of different people. Like, I don't mm-hmm. even remember everybody's name. I have to find the screenshot. But there's like people from the publishing arm, and then a couple of people from Marvel. And then like, there's just a lot of people in this Zoom call. And they were all asking me like what I would be interested in writing. And I was like, okay. And so they were just kind of trying to wrap their heads around like what I was going for, because what you kind of do is you kind of talk to them, and then you have to give them an outline. So they wanted mm-hmm. to sort of pre-approve my outline before I sent it in, and then they started drilling things down. And that was a terrifying conversation. But it was really, really interesting. When you're writing licensed characters, you know, Quarto doesn't know everything about all the Marvel characters. There's a Marvel editor for that back at Marvel, but you got to get through your editors first. And it was really a lot of fun watching them like, oh, I don't know if we can say that. I'm like, I didn't say that. Jonathan Hickman did that. Like, oh, I don't know if we can do this. No. That was Christopher Priest. Oh, is this a new character? No. Reginald Hudlin came up with that one. So it was really weird. Like in the beginning, especially with the earlier chapters that are about the history mm-hmm. of Wakanda, I kind of felt like I was defending a dissertation. Because it was sort of like, are you sure that this would happen and that would happen? But it was looking back on it now, I can say it was one of the best experiences of my life. Going through it, I probably cried every day. But it was fun because I didn't want to let fans down.
Sure.
You know, I didn't want to let, you know, and I, you know, I'm on Twitter on a regular basis. I'm like, they're going to destroy me if this is wrong, you know. So it really was about trying to make sure that I stayed true to the characters as well as honoring what had come before me. So like you said, I was threading together these stories of familiar stories to comic book readers, just changing the focus as a lens a little bit so that you're looking at it from the Doris perspective.
Yeah. That was the coolest. That was so much fun reading this and seeing, because I didn't know all of the Wakandan mythology and history, and the way that you took all of that, all this stuff that already existed, and weaved the Dora throughout it to show that they are a pivotal part of that history.
They're part of the fabric.
Yeah.
And there were some, a lot of what I made up actually was really Dora-centric. The stuff about a lot of the kings and queens of Wakanda, I really just put them in order. I didn't make, I made up a lot of it, but not most of it. But it's one of those things where Hickman does this in X-Men, where you have to like read some of the in-between pages and footnotes. And he's got like a really important note, like buried in the middle. Ta-Nehisi Coates did that too. Like he had some really important information that was like buried in the back before the letters. And I would find these gems and go, oh, that's going to the book, you know? And so I was like, it was really fun also walking back through all of these comics that I had not necessarily read in order.
Yeah.
And like seeing what I could pull out of the mythology. That was a lot of fun.
So had you already read a lot of this stuff beforehand, or did you basically have to just get a stack and start going through stuff?
Both. I had a lot of it. Some of it, but I still have like a hefty Comixology bill from last year. Because some of it was like, oh, I know that's in that comic, but I don't want to break that out. Like, I don't want to take it out of its packaging. So I'm like, all right, sure. All right, I'll buy that one. Especially when I needed it. Digital made it easier because I needed to take screenshots sometimes to prove, especially with the weapons. I had when I say this, I mean this. So When Nnedi Okorafor had the Dora running through Wakanda Forever with Spider-Man, and they had this on the spear, I need that spear to be here. So it's like, it was much easier to take screenshots and like holding up my phone.
Yeah, that's a good point. That would make that way easier, so you could just pop that into an email and send it on off.
And to provide context, I only had 15 weeks to write this book.
Oh my gosh.
So I did. That's the other thing I forgot to mention. So, which I don't recommend. Please don't ever do that.
Don't ever do that.
No, I had to sort of kind of put everything down and quit everything and just focus on this thing. And that was, it wasn't 15 minutes from like 15 minutes. It felt like 15 minutes. It wasn't 15 weeks from beginning to end of the entire process of making the book, just my draft, which still is not a lot of time. And so what I did was I sort of, instead of, because here's the thing, with the review process is wonky. You have your editors at the publishing house who have to look over everything. And then you've got, you know, line editors and people like for syntax and structure.
Yeah.
And then you've got to push it through Marvel, who's got to say, did you just break canon, or is this new, or did you stray away from your outline and why, that kind of thing. So what I did was so I could cut down on some of that approval time, I baked a lot of things that they would have to check on, like where did this come from? What comic? What, whatever. Like I kind of baked in a bibliography to every draft so that the process could go quicker. Because otherwise it was like tracking people down and finding somebody who knew about the comic I was talking about.
So what was your writing process like for this? Did you kind of go in knowing like chapter to chapter and what order it was going to be in? And how did you break it all down, and how did you put it all together?
Well, I definitely had an outline, and but because I made the decision to make the book be a series of journal entries, that allowed me to be nonlinear a little bit, which was good for my brain. Because I like would just wake up in the middle of the night and go, okay, I know exactly what I'm doing with the weapons. But that's like later in the book, you know. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was a little bit daunting was trying to write like the book in sections and just hand them a section and then realizing you had more revisions, but you got to go on to the next section. Yeah. So that was a little bit like, yeah, and making sure I had the right draft. Like my Scrivener looks ridiculous. But because we had that outline that was pre-approved, mm-hmm. that I was able to like go by, what I was able to do was put it into chunks. So the book is in five sections, which is basically tradition, honor, strength, courage, and compassion. And so I will definitely say that I wrote like strength first. No, I wrote tradition first because that was all the history. Then when I got all that out of the way, I went on to strength because I knew what I wanted to do with the weapons and fighting. Mm-hmm. And then the longer, more thoughtful chapters like compassion and courage, which I think are actually kind of the most important, those took longer to write because what I'm trying to do is show what it takes to become and graduate as an actual Dora. But I'm also teaching. The concept is this would be a book that is given to a young Dora when she first goes into the school. And then when she graduates, all of her notes and everything she gives back, the whole book gets given back to a new recruit. And the concept is not everybody coming into the school might be Wakandan because it takes place. And I don't mean they're not a Wakandan. I'm thinking of Wakanda Prime because sure. the book sort of takes place at the end of Coates's run where we now have the Intergalactic Empire. We have, so like who was a Wakanda? Like we might sure. have a Wakandan that's from another planet.
Yeah. So, and there's also the people who maybe like their family was from Wakanda, but they live in the United States.
Exactly. Like, that. Like a Sarah, right. Like a yeah. Sora rather. So what was really interesting was being able to make the book palatable to people who haven't read the comics. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, that was like a directive, but they didn't have to give me that directive. I knew, you know, because one of the main things was I couldn't pull from the movies. They wanted to make sure that I pulled all of my lore from the comics.
Sure. Because this is all like 616 canon.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. But it was a little bit daunting because I think the majority of Black Panther fans now, new fans, are all came from the movie. Even right. if they went back and looked at the comics, they don't know Don McGregor's work like a collector would, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had to be careful about that. I had to just explain to certain people, like, Nakia in every iteration in the comics is dead. Therefore, if she's in the book, it's all past tense.
Right.
Because it's handled differently in the MCU. So it was things like that. It was fun, though.
Yeah, I like the what you were saying about the book being passed on to the next people. I thought that was really a really cool idea, and it gives the book kind of a lived-in feel because you have all these notes kind of scribed on the sides from the various women who came before, and so you get to see that and like who else had this book, almost like when you were in like high school and you took a library book out and you saw all the names of the people who had checked it
yes.
out before you, you know.
Absolutely. And I also think that the other interesting, that concept, we knew we wanted that early on, mm-hmm. Me and my editor, but we weren't quite sure how we were going to execute it or who was going to talk. Because my publisher, Quarto, also did a book very similar. That's like a Jedi manual.
Oh.
And when I first, I'm pretty sure it's called The Jedi Path. And what it is how to become a Jedi and mm-hmm. all. And they had different people like Luke Skywalker and Yoda writing in the comments. But when they use that as an example for my book, and I was like, okay, but there's a lot more lore about Star Wars than right. there is about these women. They were like, that's where you come in. I'm like, oh, okay. But that was exciting knowing that I was going to create lore.
And how did you approach kind of, because there are a lot of characters who wind up popping up in the notes and as the writers of the chapters, how did you approach trying to give them each a different voice, you know, to like set them apart from each other?
Yeah, that was difficult. I think the easiest one was, well, older comic book readers will remember Queen Divine Justice, but her name is Asira Davin. Her American name. And that is how Ta-Nehisi Coates used her character. So I also had her as one of the commentaries, and she was sort of the American, like, they do what now? Yeah. Which was fun. So I knew how she was going to talk. Okoye is always very like, I'm not asking again. This is how this works. Like, she's very much in charge. But sure. Then the others, a lot of the other Dora, I actually really poured over Jonathan Mayberry's Doom War, because that is the one that had the most Dora in it at mm-hmm. one point. Like, there was like 500 Dora that were going to war with Doom at that time. And it was really funny because at one point Marvel wasn't sure if they wanted me to reference Doom War, and I was like heartbroken because I'm like, that's where the Midnight Angels were born. I have to use this.
Out of curiosity, did they give a reason why they didn't know?
No, they never give a reason. Like, there were certain other things that I wanted to like name. They're like, you can't do that. And then I can't say what they are, but I can say that because my book was like finished in October, like my draft was finished in October of last year. I didn't know anything about the new run that came out this year.
Oh, okay.
And so there are certain things that they told me no, and I was a little annoyed about. And then I'm like, oh, because there's a new guy. Because I had a whole other concept of showcasing some other Wakandans, and like, yeah, you can't do that. And I didn't know why. And now that I've read the new Black Panther run, I'm like, okay, I understand. They didn't want to confuse fans and stuff. And that's really hard. The person who's got to like keep all that traffic straight, I don't envy them. But yeah, it was. And then there's a couple of characters, like, for instance, the former head of the school died, spoiler alert, in Roxanne Gay's run, you know, Mistress Zola.
Yeah.
So, but I still wanted her to have a voice. And so I was able to give her a voice that sounded similar to I'm not writing like Roxanne Gay, but similar to how she wrote her in Temperament. And then, of course, Io and Anika, you know, they're a couple. Mm-hmm. But there were other people that I was able, there's a few new characters that I was able to create, like the new head of the school and a couple new characters that were dotted throughout. But I really tried to make everybody's voice distinct. That took some editing, though, because there's a couple characters that we kept, because their voices weren't that distinct, we kept mixing them up. Like, wait, who wrote that chapter? No, that's not her. That's her. You know, and then we'd have to go back to the comics and go, wait, she couldn't have written that chapter because she wasn't there when that happened. So that sometimes informed who was speaking when.
So you really had to keep your own timelines intact as you're going
along. Yeah, I had
along.
Like red string and images. It was crazy.
That's wild. How cool must it feel though to know that something that you did is canon? Like, these characters that you made could eventually be popping up in comic books because now they are part of the 616 universe.
I am stunned. I'm thrilled. I had an incredible moment. One of the characters that Ta-Nehisi Coates, well, actually, Jonathan Hickman created Nahanda, but Ta-Nehisi Coates actually fleshed that character out.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to, they allowed me to make her the creator of the Dora. And I had this really amazing moment where after the New York screening of the movie, Ta-Nehisi Coates I just saw him in the lobby. It was the most surreal moment. First of all, he's very tall. Like, he's like 6'3", 6'4". Like, he's a very tall man. And so, like, you can't not miss him. But that was like, wait a minute, that's Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I had a copy of the book in my purse, and I just ran over and I was like, hi, you don't know me. Marvel let me write a book about the Dora Milaje. And I was able to make Nahanda the person that created them. And he was like, what? And I handed him the book and I ran away because I was terrified. But he was, I know he was like somewhere like with this book, like, what? So and I know he's got a new like podcast. So I'm going to see if I can find a way to talk. I don't know if I can go on the podcast, but I would love to have a conversation about what he thinks about what I did.
Yeah. That'd be so cool.
Because so much of the book was informed by, I mean, all of the Black Panther runs, but more specifically his, because he got into like the politics and the different kings and the originators and things like that.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have read all of the comics to understand this book. I really want to make sure that everybody understands that.
I definitely agree with that. I have a very before this book, I had a very limited knowledge of Wakanda and the Black Panther stories. I've read a handful, but this, it really helped me. Like, you could come in a complete novice, and this would inform you on just basically, like, here's everything you need to know. And then you could go back, and if you read the comics after the fact, then you're like, oh, I remember reading about that. You really laid it all out in a nice way that someone could come in cold and understand Wakanda and its people and the Dora by the end really, really well.
Yeah. And that makes me, like, so happy to hear you say that, because I definitely didn't want to get so bogged down with, like, canon and stuff that I missed that. But I did want to do things like, you know, a lot of people know about Reginald Hudlin's run that was about Azuri, mm-hmm. who I heard might be making an appearance in a video game. Not from Marvel. This is just word on the street. And I remember thinking, yeah, when the Howling Commandos showed up at his doorstep and was like, you can't kill these people. And he was like, who are you? Go home. There were women there. I was like, there was actually two women standing on either side of him. They must have been Dora. So what I started to do was say, well, who were they? Well, maybe one of them was Mr. Sola years before she started the school.
Okay.
So things like that. Like, yeah. I would always look at these pictures, because there was a lot of comics where the Dora were just there. You know, you saw bald women, Spears, Dora. But I would go, okay, but who are they? One of my favorite Black Panther comics is actually part of the Skrull run by Jason Aaron, called See Wakanda and Die. And I tell people all the time, it's like the F around and find out of comics. It's the most epic run. And I don't want to give it away. I want you to try and find it or find a digital version. I don't know if it's still in print, but it was so good. And one of the things that he was really good at was giving characterizations and life to side characters and characters that might be dying on the very next page.
Right.
But that very quick sort of slice of life type of thing is what I wanted to capture in this book. And so, yeah, I'm very excited that I got to play in this playground.
So if you had to pick one thing, because obviously, you know, you put a lot into this book and you got to create a lot of things. If you could say, like, you had your most proudest moment when you look back at it and you're like, that was me. I did that. What do you think it was? Was it the moment you mentioned earlier with, like, the creator of the Dora Milaje, or what do you think?
Actually, I think that would be it. Like, yeah. Because that was the one thing that I thought they were going to tell me that I couldn't do. And when they came back and said, no, that's great, and had some other notes, I was like, oh my God, I just created canon. You know, like, I just said, because whenever anybody says, where did the Dora Milaje come from? People go, Christopher Priest. And I'm like, no, in world. Mm-hmm. And it's always like, oh, and now I've created their in-world story. And I'm just so fascinated by that and excited. That's just one thing that I'll be like, if I never wrote another book, that would be my little legacy. And I'm very, very excited about that. I think the only other thing that I'm also excited about is the Kamoyo bead whip. Because I couldn't understand, if you have something that's that powerful, why is it just a bracelet? Why wouldn't it be a belt or wear it across your chest? Like, so sure. It's an expandable, it can be worn as a belt, but it's expandable and can turn into an electrified vibranium whip. And anybody at Marvel who would like to draw that and put it in a comic, I'd be very excited to see that. But yeah, I know it sounds like really weird, like the creative Dora and a whip are the two things I'm excited about, but just being able to create some of that canon. And there's some other really small moments in the book I'm proud of too. Like, I don't want to give any away because a couple are surprises, but some of the characters that I was able to round out, and I was able to do a little story about a Jabari girl who becomes a Dora, That meant a lot, because I think everybody thinks that they all come from the same place. And that was a way to sort of explain how, no, Wakanda not only is very different cultural and language systems, but also climate, which has also been, you know, shown in the movies.
Sure.
And so, and she was shorter. So she comes from a cold climate and she's tiny. And here she is with these women who are from the city.
These statuesque where it's warm, women.
And they're right. And so she's got to find a way to fit in and be effective with a different fighting style and speaking a different language. And I just think that speaks to a lot of like first gen kids who have to like figure stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I've said this before, ultimately I wrote this book for my niece who is 4 and doesn't understand that, but I'm hoping to be part of a future show and tell.
Oh.
I'm dusting off my blazer.
That's awesome. That's really sweet. I like that. Something else, because you were talking about you know, Wakanda is made up of many tribes and they're all very unique. And you see that a lot in the MCU with like the council and how each of the tribes are very different. Did you do a lot of research into various African tribes to pull a little bit from actual Africa for this?
I did. It's interesting. It was less about, well, let me rewind. I did pull a lot from real world African mm-hmm. history because I also felt that it was like a bit of a teachable moment.
Sure.
The Jabari have always, in the comics anyway, been, it seems as if they've been referred to or paralleled with the Igbo of Nigeria. So mm-hmm. it was very important to me that that character I was just mentioning was mm-hmm. Igbo, and she spoke not Yoruba, not Swahili, not Hausa, but Igbo. Right. I also tried to infuse African languages in the book. It's tough to do when you're dealing with an English language book that has to have so many words and we don't have time for translations every 2 pages. Yeah. So a lot of that stuff got pulled, but there's still moments and words that are in the book. I think even on, I'm just trying to see if it's still in the first page. Oh yeah, even the name of the book, which is Ukukanya, is a Zulu word for light, and that was sort of, that's what they would have physically called this book. I also like the fact that they let me change, well, not change, but they let me update one thing. Like, it's always bothered me that everybody calls the flower, the plant, the heart-shaped herb.
Yeah,
because that's like a Western translation for what, you know, and so they right. let me call it in world Ewe Okan, which is a Yoruba term for basically the flower of consciousness, the flower of spirit oh. flower, basically. And so I was able to do little things like that, and then larger things like the, I didn't create this part though. Ta-Nehisi Coates did a really good job of explaining the Orisha, the gods of Wakanda.
That was a fascinating section for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is each god has it. Well, except for Bast and Thoth, which are both Egyptian, mm-hmm. the other ones come from different regions, but they all still mm-hmm. are representative of different aspects of nature. And then, yeah, there was actually a very funny moment in there because in the middle of my writing this book, or when I first started, Vita Ayala had just, I don't remember how many issues in, but X of Swords was out. And they had Storm steal this sword that didn't exist before I got the job. And I was like, hold up, who had the sword? And I remember having a conversation with them like, listen, I know you can't tell me what happens because Marvel snipers and all, but I need to know whether or not Storm ever makes good with Wakanda again, because that's going to mess my book up.
Right.
And they were like, no. They definitely make good. They definitely return the sword. But I said, okay, so where's your lore from the sword? And I remember they were like, yeah, it's just in the comic. It's just Bashanga had it. I'm like, Bashanga had it. Okay. And so I had to figure out how to weave. She did what I call a Hickman, because Jonathan Hickman is good for that. Jonathan Hickman in like one of the Fantastic Fours rattles off the names of like 3 different Wakandan kings, and that never does anything with them.
Oh, yeah.
It's when Reed Richards and T'Challa are entering the necropolis and he meets Bast, who's going to name him King of the Dead. He's just, yes, that's king that's king that. I was like, I'm like, really, Hickman, really? You know, so now that was part of my research of finding yeah. who was going where. But one of the things that came out, just getting back to sort of the true history, Mujaji is one of the names of the gods of Wakanda. she is of the water and of, she's really over crops, but crops is also equals, you know, rain and agriculture. And in real life, there is a goddess Mujaji that is a South African goddess of rain. And what was very interesting about that story is Mujaji in real life, it's a matrilineal system. So all of the priestesses are women. And going back to one of the earliest priestesses, someone in her court, I never was able to parse out whether or not it was a family member or just a male member of the city, tried to kill her, saying that a woman shouldn't be in charge. And at that moment, she decided she was only going to have women be in her court and basically be her guardians. And she called them her wives. So I was
That's wild.
Right, exactly. So the moment I saw that story, I was like, that's Nahanda's story.
Heck yeah.
That, and it, and it's from real life. So that's, I found parallels like that, that
that's
I found
so
like,
cool.
And like the weapons and things like that. I think a lot of people think that they only fight with swords, but there's also hand-to-hand combat. And, you know, there's a lot of African martial arts that I included, East Asian martial arts. Like I kind of made it a world of, that's one of the things going back to that character I talked about, how little she was. Fighting with the spear wasn't, she had to learn how to do it, but that wasn't her favorite thing to do. She rather, she was more interested in learning Pencak Silat, which is an Indonesian fighting style. That's who you see everybody in, like John Wick, that fights low to the ground. That's Pencak Silat, or anybody who is a fan of that, the Raid. Raid Redemption, that is Pencak. So that's the kind of fighting style she had. So that just went back to like me and my brothers watching martial arts movies on Sunday mornings, you know. So it was just, I was able to, it was just weird that I was able to just pick through all of my favorite things and sort of throw them into this book.
I really enjoyed the section on the hand-to-hand combat of the martial arts. As a like lifelong martial artist myself, I thought, that's something that is super important for these women who are supposed to be so super badass that they have a way to deal with everything. And so many different martial arts, every martial art has something good about it. And they also have their drawbacks. And so the best way to combat the drawbacks is to pull from somewhere else. Like Bruce Lee always, that was one of his
big
things.
Yeah, be like water.
Exactly, yeah. And I thought that was really cool seeing all the places you were pulling from and filling in the gaps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then also even the courage section. Like, all of the hand-to-hand combat in the world and all the vibranium of the, in the world isn't going to help you if you're fighting a psionic.
Right.
Is it going to help you if you're fighting Emma Frost? Like, so how do you do that, you know? And how do you grieve? How do you deal with depression? How do you, and that's when I was able to get some like real world stuff in there too. Like, how do you, cause it's sort of just, these women are badass all the time. Like they never grieve. Now, I had no idea the World of Wakanda was going to be so much about grief. I didn't know that at the time, but it was just interesting because it was showing like how they regroup and how you can't be up here like 135% all the time. Otherwise you won't be able to, that's not sustainable. Yeah.
You've got to take the, you have to have the soft with the hard, and you have to have equal parts of both.
Exactly. And that's why reconnaissance and language and things like that are so important.
Oh yeah.
Cause that's why I felt the compassion section was so important, because there's so many conflicts that can be resolved if you could just understand what the other person is saying. So like, you've got to be there to listen. And that also kind of segued into, there are more than just five Dora. You know, there's Dora in different departments, which I thought was fun. And also, like, what happens if you don't die in the battlefield? Like, if you just age out, you got bad knees, what happens to them? You know, that was the other thing that I found fun.
That section I really appreciated, because it does give you a deeper look at them as people and not just the warrior side, because that's mostly what we get to see. We get to see a little bit more of the humanity for them in Wakanda Forever, you know, with like Okoye gets to be kind of like the Shemp to, you know, Shuri's, you know, like they have a little fun there. But this really lets you know that, yes, they are amazing on the battlefield, but the reason these women are so formidable and are so important is all of the other aspects to who they are and what they can do, and that they are everywhere. You just don't realize they're everywhere.
Right. Exactly. It's the concept I kept thinking was, if you hear them, it's too late.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I love this book. I think you did a phenomenal job, and I would tout it to anyone who has any passing interest in learning more about Wakanda and the Dora Milaje.
I got a great compliment the other day. Somebody who does, I mean, I wouldn't tell Marvel this, but they were like, this would make a great rule book for a role-playing game. And I was like, can you imagine?
Man.
Can you imagine?
Oh, wow. That's... I am a D&D nerd through and through, and I am here for that. That sounds fantastic.
I didn't even think about it, because I'm not a big D&D fan, but I'm like, oh, and there's levels. And yeah. I just didn't even think about it like that, but I think that would be amazing.
That's pretty fun. So do you have like ideas percolating were Marvel to ever approach again and say, would you want to write a comic for us in this world? Do you have some stuff kind of floating around in the back there? Obviously, don't share it. I don't want anybody to steal your stuff. But
yeah, no. I have a few ideas. Some of them we sort of talked about already. But I think this literally just dropped this week, so hardly anybody knows this. I actually have a story in the next Marvel's Voices, Wakanda Forever. It's funny, though. It's not a Dora Milaje story. It's a T'Challa story. But it's still sort of playing with this universe.
That's awesome.
And it's going to be like, I've written like forewords and afterwards, and I have stuff in letters pages and things, but I have never actually written like a comic. So this is I have like 8 pages in the new Marvel's Voices dropping in February. So
that is so much. Congratulations. That is so much fun.
Yeah. I'm kind of terrified, but.
Are you allowed to say who did the art for the section?
Oh, yeah, it's already out. Elisa Martinez, I got to team up with her again. And that's something I meant to mention. I was not, when you write prose, well, actually, even when you do comics, you don't always get a chance to talk with or work with your artists, which was one of the things I did lament, because I would have loved to just kind of sit down and sort of like pick their brains and stuff. Yeah. But I was very happy that they got the oil painter Sheba Maya to do the chapter headings, because she's got some beautiful work. And then they were able to get Ashley Woods to do the cover. And then really late in the game, Aletha Martinez did me a huge favor. And I was just begging them to work with her, because not only did Aletha draw a lot of World of Wakanda with Roxane Gay, but she worked on the original comic with Christopher Priest. Because if anybody knows the Marvel system, like, not every artist draws every single page. Sometimes to hit deadlines, sometimes there are other artists. And Aletha was one of those artists. So she drew some of the original Dora Milaje. So it meant a lot to me to have her on this book. And then they got us to team up again. I haven't seen her art for my next piece, though. So I can't wait to see that. So what I'm... The sales of this book have been going incredible. And what I'm hoping for is a second printing, so I can maybe get some new art. I don't know, but we'll see.
That would be awesome. I mean, the art in this book is absolutely gorgeous. Like, every piece of art in here is really cool. And I think actually when we were talking at Comic-Con, did you say that Aletha, she drew the pages of the various costumes of,
because
the characters,
I needed to give the cosplay girl something to do. But it was the easiest thing for her to do, because she drew World of Wakanda. So I knew we wouldn't have to explain to her, okay, so when they're outside in the cold and they've got the blue, they've got the hood, but not the part with the gold. Like, I didn't have to do that because she drew it. So she was the person who came up with it. So I really can't wait for people to like see the new work that we're doing. And then if I do, I won't know for sure until after the first of the year, but if I get a second printing and there's some new art, I cannot wait to show everybody, because I love what's in here, but a deluxe edition would be so amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fingers crossed. I mean, I'm very glad to hear that the book is doing super well.
Yeah, I'm incredibly lucky. This is not the only Wakanda book out. I've gotten some, I think I am shocked at the amount of non-comic book readers mm-hmm. who have like been reviewing it and giving it love. And thank you to all of you who might be listening, who picked it up or bought it for a friend. It means a lot, especially since it's my first book.
Are you planning on doing any more, do you think? Any more? Not even necessarily just Marvel, but in general.
Yeah, well, I had a kid, before this happened, I had a kid's book I was trying to work out. I am going to go back to that. But now that this exists, I'm like, oh, there's so many stories in this book, though. So, yeah, there's a lot that's there. I do like the YA kid space because it allows, well, first, they're not like yelling at you about canon. But but second, like there's stuff I'm trying to write books that my little niece, my cousins like that could read. Because I think what happens to those of us who kind of grew up reading comics or are comic book fans, we forget that a lot of these stories did start for kids. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot there for them right now. So I'm trying to help fill a little of that gap. And yeah, Fred Joseph has a great young kids Wakanda Forever book out right now, which is also about Adora. We didn't even know this. We were writing our book simultaneously and we didn't know it. So I'm just really excited to see where the franchise goes. And I'm also excited that Marvel has worked with so many different diverse writers. Mm-hmm. Like Tanana Reeve-Du wrote a book. And like I mentioned, there's just been so many authors over the past few years that I like the fact that they're opening up this world. And Nnedi Okorafor, a lot of the work, she's an underrated writer in the Wakanda space. She also, along with Ta-Nehisi Coates, really set and did a lot of the world building of Wakanda. I feel like Ta-Nehisi Coates did the world building of the royal family and the kingdom, and Nnedi Okorafor did the world building of Wakanda proper, of the everyday mm-hmm. people, in a lot of her writing. So yeah, and I'm just happy to be included with these names. Like, what?
That's got to be a really cool experience. And I agree with you. I think that and this isn't a diss on anyone else, but I do think that Marvel, above anybody else, is doing the best job, I think, at, oh, like you were saying, kind of opening up the world. And like, there was that old phrase that Stan Lee used to always say about, you know, Marvel's what you see when you look out your window, you know, like.
That was very good. That was very good.
Thank you, spider friend. You know, like that. I feel like Marvel is really trying to live up to that idea, and they're doing a great job there. You're right. There are so many amazing authors and artists out there that they're given a chance. Like one at the top of my list that I really want to get to that I haven't yet, because my queue is enormous, is Peach Momoko and like all the Damon Day's stuff. And
yes, yeah. I haven't either. No, I have a stack. We were saying this before we started recording. I'm like, all I want for Christmas is an app. I just want to lay in my bed and read comics and eat pie. That's it. That's all I want to do.
That sounds amazing on all counts. It really does. What's in your stack right now? Like, what's something that when you get to lay in bed and eat pie, what's the first book you're going to read?
You know what's really funny? I haven't finished Skyward. And I know I'm like, it's not over, but I really, really want to finish, like catch up to everybody else. X-Men Red. I have I read like the first two issues and then I had to like do a bunch of other stuff. I'm going to finish that up, get back into, I'm behind on Saga. And that's the other thing. I think people are surprised when I start like naming indie comics and I'm like, No. I read all kinds of comics. I'm not that person. I'm not like, oh, it has to be Marvel or it has to be DC. I'm not.
Same. Yeah.
So I can't, you know, I think all of the news that's been coming out about DC is kind of crazy, but it's still the DCEU. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that I want to see. I think I did tweet at James Gunn, though, the other day when he was like, he said to the masses, what is a DC character that you would love to see have a movie? And mm-hmm. I was like, Green Lantern, John Stewart, like immediately. Like,
yeah. Oh, 100%.
Please.
I like, there was rumor it was ages ago, but there was like a rumor that they were going to do almost like a buddy cop Green Lantern movie. And it was like a John Stewart, Hal Jordan. And I thought that would be so much fun. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
And it would introduce the world of the two characters.
Yeah.
You know? The other comic I want to finish up is Radiant Black.
I'm so behind on that, but that book is so damn good.
It is. But that's the thing. Like, when I get to the point that I'm like racing through something just to like write a review or racing through something, I'm like, I got to go back and enjoy this.
Yeah.
Like I have to like, let's say I have to have a conversation about somebody, about a book with someone. Many times I'll skim so that I won't sound like an idiot. But like Radiant Black is one of those, again, that is one that's like in the bed with pie over the holidays.
Like, and there is so much to that now with the Radiant Pink book and the Radiant Red books. And I think he's really, Higgins, yeah. He's creating such a crazy, amazing
like
world.
Like the Green Lantern core and the different core. Like it's that same type of world build. And I love it. I love it. And yeah, you know, Hickman, I swear if I, Hickman's brain, like I don't understand how he sees that far ahead in his stories. It's just, it's fascinating.
I've mentioned it on the show before. I can't remember who to accredit the quote to, but they were saying that there's in comic writing and in writing in general, there are gardeners and there are architects. Like the gardeners kind of, they plant the seed and they're like, let's see how this goes. And then there's your architect who has everything laid out. And that
Hickman.
Is totally Hickman. Yeah. Like East of West. Have you ever read East of West?
Yes.
Holy crap. There is so much going on in that book.
Exactly. And then people are like, oh, it could be a movie. And I'm like, yes, but who could do this? Who could? I almost don't want it made. Like, I haven't heard if it's going to be made or not. But like, almost don't want it made because I will not live up to what I read. You know?
I feel like that's when you hand over to HBO and let them do like crazy amounts of seasons of it. Like that.
Well, not
feels
right
like
now. Not right now. Let them get themselves together.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Canceling everything right.
Good point.
Now.
Yeah. And don't give it to, you know, I love you, Netflix, but don't give it to Netflix because they'll do an amazing first season and then it'll
and
just
then
get
they'll
canceled.
Kill it. Yeah. 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 Nope. Nope. I think we should just wait this one out, see who ends up with money by second quarter and give it
there
to them.
There we go. Yeah, just hold back and then pursue. Well, this has been a ton of fun. Before we go, we got a couple minutes left, and I haven't really had the chance to just kind of talk to anybody about Wakanda Forever.
Ah.
So I'm curious, how did you feel after watching that film? What did you think of it?
Well, I think I've seen it four times now. Yeah, I've seen it four times.
You liked it.
I did like it. So the first time I saw it, like, I brought a lot of tissues because I knew I was going to bawl through
all
the whole
feels.
Thing.
All
oh
the
my
feels.
God. And it's really interesting because, like, I knew they were going to make Riri. Like, you could see it.
Sure.
But, you know, everybody was like, no, it's not going to be here. I'm like, it kind of has to be.
Yeah.
But I like the way they dealt with it. There's only one thing I did not like about the movie, and that was the fact that they killed Ramonda. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, even in Coates' run, she was gravely injured, but she was in a coma, but she didn't die. And the finality of that, granted, she can come back as a Wakandan force ghost.
Basically.
She can come back in, you know, walking the plains of Jalia and talking to her child. But still, I like really wanted her. I just felt like that one hit me hard. The whole movie hit me hard, but then when they took her out and then like that quickly, like the next shot, it was like funeral. I was like, what?
Yeah. I was like, no way. They didn't just do that.
I still have feelings about how that went down. But I thought like Tenoch Huerta is my new hero. Like I loved, he is an anti-hero, but he's also a villain. Like he killed Queen Ramonda. So, but the thing about him is he did absolutely everything he said he was going to do. And you definitely got the feeling, like I loved how they showed very subtly just how old he is.
Yeah.
Like how his mother was like in her 70s or 80s and was dying and he still looked like a 10-year-old because of his X-Men gene, well, not X-Men gene, his mutant gene. He aged very slowly. Also how he was trying to explain, like, I've been here a really long time, y'all. Trust me. They're going to try and tear us up for resources.
He has seen the cycles.
Exactly. And he's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect my people. And he said, if you or anybody else comes to my home and hurts my people, I will come back and kill you. And that's exactly what he did. But the way, I think the other thing that for me, just geeking out a little bit of the Dora Milaje, you know, just seeing Okoye do battle with Atuma.
Oh, wow. What a great scene.
That was a great, especially like when she got lost her spear and he was like, he looked at Riri who was knocked out. He was like, she ain't going anywhere. This is kind of fun. Here, grab your sword. Let's go at this again.
I love that mutual respect, the warrior's respect between the two of them.
Yeah.
Like, and I want you at your best.
Exactly. And the Midnight Angels, of course, I was screaming and yelling when I saw them flying in. And I also liked how they used Namor and his people to explain a lot of things without explaining it. Like, that siren song that they used. So every, you know, we always hear about the sirens and the sirens that will kill you and the sirens that will make seafaring men just lose their minds. It giving that lore to them, you know, I just thought it was fascinating. So there was a lot, you know, and then of course it was visually stunning.
Gorgeous movie.
Yeah, I think the only thing I was kind of like, about was Riri's suit, but it was like, it was so minor because you saw it for 5 seconds.
I have a feeling that was because, as far as I know anyway, I don't think it's been put on hold, but that we're going to get an Ironheart show.
Yeah, no, we absolutely are.
Yeah, so I think like this, we were just getting to see the progression of where she's going. You know what I mean? We're going to get that final gorgeous suit in her own project, I think. Because I was thinking that's the
why
same thing.
And I think that's also why Shuri said, you know, this has to stay in Wakanda.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like, you're not going to see this suit again. And then you're right. The suit that we saw her when she first flew out of her garage, and that was sort of like her Mark One.
Yeah. It was like an ugly battle mech, basically. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to see that progression, I'm pretty sure.
But I thought the movie was so emotional. And then at the end, I bawled because my boyfriend's Haitian. Haiti's going through so much right now. And to make not only name T'Challa's son Toussaint, but make him grow up in Haiti, I was like, the next Black Panther's Haitian? I can't. Like, that's amazing for kids, you know? Also, he just hopped around the diaspora. Like, we were in Cape Verde, we were in Chicago, we were in, you know,
it was a worldly
Haiti.
Film. Yeah.
It was. It's really funny because I felt this movie should have been called World of Wakanda. Because makes of sense. How we were not in Wakanda much, you know, we really were all around the world. But I just thought it was beautifully rendered. Again, I voiced my criticism, but it's not like, oh my God, I hate this movie. Mm-hmm. It's just, I just wish Ramonda, I mean, because it's Angela Bassett, you know, I want her living forever.
And she was so phenomenal. Like, her incredible delivery in that movie. Oh my gosh. Like, her speech, the big, you know, have I not suffered it? Like, oh, wow.
And then when she fired Okoye.
Yeah.
Oh,
and Danai Gurira in that scene, too,
absolutely
broke my heart.
Incredible. Yeah. And you know what? It's just, I think the other thing that you noticed, even with, like, Letitia Wright, was, like, they were grieving as they were working. Because the thing, I had written an article for Mashable about this. People don't understand that shooting had started on this film when he died. When Chadwick died. It's not like he died and then they went back and said, okay. I mean, they obviously had to go back and stop shooting and rewrite some things. But principal photography, second unit photography, had all started on this film before he passed away. It's just he deteriorated apparently so quickly that all of a sudden, you know, and then all of a sudden he was gone. So it was just one of those things where there was a lot of talk about who should have played. There should have been a new T'Challa or a new, you know, man in charge or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think it would have been too soon for the actors to have just lost him and then have another actor just walk in and it's like, okay, he's going to be T'Challa now. I think that would have been too much for them.
Yeah, I remember, have you ever seen the show Spartacus? That I think it was
on
Stars, and a similar thing happened there. And they had to take the time, and they did that extra season where you just didn't have Spartacus and there was a separation. I think you're right. I think that you can see, like, the movie, the film, and the emotion is so much more palpable because so much of it probably was real. Like, they were just feeling a certain way, and it was part of the story too. And so I think anyway, we got to see a lot of real grieving happening in that movie.
No, we absolutely did. And I think people forget, like, they were shooting this movie, like, he died at the end of the summer in 2020. The summer of 2020. So yeah. You've got, not, I just remember, not just his death, everything. COVID, we're locked in our houses, there's riots in the streets, there's, you know, all of the things that were happening. And we were all sort of dealing with it ourselves. Yeah. So I really felt like the movie just allowed people to just collectively grieve. You know, just take a moment, 100%. Take a breath and go, that happens. And we're going to honor that happened. And we're going to sit in that for a minute, but you're going to be okay. And that's essentially what Namor said to her. Like, I can't tell you why your brother died, but I can tell you that you're going to you will move on and you will get past this and you will be queen.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was fascinating.
And that is really at the core, by the end of the movie, that is totally what I think you just expressed exactly what that movie has become. It's like, you're going to go through this. It's going to hurt, but you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Karma, this has been so much fun getting to chat with you today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And before we roll out, why don't you tout your wares one more time? Tell people where they can find you and how they can get more of Karma.
Well, you can find me, the Blurred Girl, TheBlerd, all over the interwebs. I'm still on Twitter. Not quite sure what's happening with Twitter. I'm still there, but I'm spending most of my time on TikTok and Instagram now. I am out of my own personal stock of Protectors of Wakanda. I was signing copies and, you know, sending them to people who purchased them for me. I don't have any more. There'll be more coming out in February. If you want to pre-order, you can hit any of my link in profiles on any of those platforms. And I'm also, if you have already bought a book and you didn't get it signed, I'm selling book plates now. So there are, if you want to just buy a little book plate to put inside of it, those you can also get at any of my link in bios. But
that's a cool idea.
I really appreciate all the support and love that I've gotten for the book. And I am so excited for 2023.
And that's a wrap for this week. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review and leave us a user review on your favorite podcast app. It'll really help the show continue to grow and find new listeners. You know what else will? Tell a friend. Tell 10. If they like comics, they should know about the comics that we love. If you want to support the show and get lots of extra podcasts and other content as well, there is a Patreon that helps keep the lights on and internet connected so that we can continue bringing you that sweet nerd media. Links to that in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the show, and as always, keep reading, keep dreaming. Peace.
The comics that we love.